Welcome to an Englishman in the Balkans podcast. I'm David.
I'm Tamara.
And this podcast is where we bring you stories of life, culture, and adventure in Bosnia and Herzegovina.
From the unique perspective of exploring this beautiful corner of the world.
Whether you're here for travel tips, cultural insights, or simply to share in the stories of everyday life, we're glad you've joined us. Let's dive in.
Today I'm diving into a topic that has intrigued me for a long time, and that is, what does it take to move abroad? And more importantly, how do you navigate the challenges of settling into a new country? Now, over the years, I've received countless questions about how I managed to build a life here in Bosnia and Herzegovina. And the simple answer has always been, well, I'm married to a local. But of course, there's so much more to it. Bureaucracy, cultural differences, and the unexpected twists that come with making a foreign country your home. And just as I was pondering this, I came across Kimberly Ann, the creator of Expat on a Budget, an insightful Substack and podcast dedicated to guiding people through the process of moving abroad. Her expertise in relocation and her personal journey from the United States to Portugal make her the perfect guest to help me unpack this topic. So I reached out, and so here we are. Today, Kimberly is joining me to share her wisdom on moving abroad, embracing new cultures, and avoiding common pitfalls along the way. So Kimberly, welcome. Let's start with the basics. Who is Kimberly Ann?
So I am a native Californian for my entire life until I moved abroad to Portugal. And now I live in Porto. I've been here 2.5 years. I'm here on the D7 passive income visa.
What made you choose Portugal when you decided to leave the United States?
Number one, I qualified for the visa. So I guess number one before that, I'm a Europhile. So I've been obsessed with Europe my entire life. I blame my parents, you know, because it's fun. They brought us on a trip to France because my sister was fluent in French by the age of 16. And I was 9 years old. And it was just such a big impact on me, like it had such a big impact on me that I kept coming back to Europe. So I've been other places as well, but my heart really felt like I belonged in Europe. I knew that I wanted to leave the US. I never felt like it was my home. It just never felt right to me ever. And so I started researching how to leave. And I researched for 10 years before I actually did it. And COVID and a very painful breakup was the impetus for leaving. So Portugal was on my radar about 3 years before COVID. When I was researching where to move in Europe, I realized that I qualified for the D7 visa. And then I found out that Portugal was at that time the most affordable place in or country in Western Europe. It was the third safest country in the world. And I had heard the healthcare was good. I didn't know how good it really is. It's amazing. And so that's the crux.
That must have taken a lot of courage moving your entire life to a new country, not to mention the language barrier. Did the thought of not speaking Portuguese worry you at all?
It's interesting. People say that I'm brave, and it's a hard word to embody because I felt at that point that the point that I chose to move here, I felt like I didn't really have another choice. I was working 2 full-time jobs for 40 years. I was over it. I was over the pace of America and a lot of other issues. So my sister, who obviously I mentioned is fluent in French, told me the first thing to do is to just listen to the language every single day for an hour, if possible, and learn the music of the language and try to find where one word ends and another word begins. And that's your first step. And I did that for a year before I moved here. I also had a teacher, so I did take lessons every week. But when I got here, I couldn't speak it. And it's 2.5 years, and I've gone through A2, which is basic Portuguese, in order to become a permanent resident here. And I still can't speak it. I still have a tutor every week, and I still study. And it's a very difficult language, but I do make the effort.
It sounds like embracing the culture has been a big part of your journey. One of the most common things I tell people when they ask about moving abroad is learn about the culture first. Why do you think that's so important?
I moved by myself, sight unseen. I had never been to Portugal before. I think it's important for a lot of reasons. I was just writing a lesson on this actually before I met you today. It's respect. I think that's number one. We're going into another culture, and I personally don't want to change the other culture, but I think that out of respect for the other culture, I need to learn about it. There was an incident that happened when I first moved to Portugal, and I was staying with somebody that I knew in the Algarve, and a friend came to visit, and she said, "It's so interesting about being in Portugal. They just really don't have a sense of identity or a culture." And I had been here long enough to want to slap her in the face. I did not, because that would be rude. But I was shocked. I was shocked that somebody would be, to me, that was really ignorant, because no matter where you are in the world, there's a culture and there's an identity. And I know, being an American, that we have such a huge identity specifically. We are raised to believe that we are the greatest nation on earth. We really believe that. And it takes travel to make you realize, number one, that's not true. And number two, that's so, what's the word? Egotistical. It's disgusting. So I think that we can't become, we can't give back, we can't become part, I don't know about the word assimilate, that's kind of a weird one, but we can't become a part of another culture and really admire it and learn from it if we don't even know about it. You know, it wasn't scary. It's so weird. It was, what was scary was when I got here and I realized I couldn't find a market. I didn't know how to get furniture. I didn't know anything. So I'm the kind of person that when I make up my mind to do something, I just jump and do it. I don't really think too hard about it. I plan, I research, but then I just do it. And I always say, if I had known how hard things were going to be for most everything I've done in my life, I would have never done anything. So moving here wasn't, no, I was so excited. I was just really excited about starting a new adventure.
Well, that brings me to another big question. How do locals react to foreigners who genuinely want to learn about their culture?
They're receptive. They're all receptive. They want to teach. They want people who come here to know, and they want us to tell other people what we've learned. It's important for their culture to be recognized and passed on and not homogenized. We say America is a melting pot, but I don't think that that's the answer for other cultures. And I can't say that's not going to happen because so many people are moving abroad, but I think that it's important to maintain the cultural identity of the places that we move to or even visit. I remember when I went to China, I was studying in China. I was an acupuncturist and I was studying medicine, Chinese medicine there. I was working in a hospital and there was no soap in the bathroom in the hospital. And I asked one of the doctors that I was working with, I said, "How do you clean your hands?" And my friend, an American, hit me really hard in the shoulder. And she said, "That's rude. Don't ask that." And I said, "Why is that rude? I don't know the answer to that." So is that insensitive? Maybe it was. Maybe it was insensitive or rude, but I asked, explained it, and I learned something from them. So I like asking questions, and especially I think it's most important to ask for people that are local.
I'd like to touch on the subject of finances, which can sometimes be a touchy subject for expats. In some places, foreigners are seen as wealthier than locals, even when they aren't necessarily well off. Have you encountered this at all in Portugal?
I call myself expat on a budget, but the fact is that I have more money than most Portuguese people have, even though in America, I would be poverty level. And I think that it's important, and I've written about this too. Well, I think it's important not to flaunt your money. I don't like that in the US either. I'm not one of those drive a fancy car. People have never had a fancy car on purpose. I couldn't afford one, but I think even if I could, I wouldn't have one. And I don't want to carry name brand items and advertise a name brand item and all that. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I just choose not to do that myself. That's part of it. But then there's also feeding back into the local economy as much as we possibly can, hiring Portuguese workers, which I do. So I try to hire only Portuguese. There have been a couple times where I've hired a Brazilian, like the woman who cuts my hair is Brazilian. I had gone to a Portuguese person, but I am now going to a Brazilian woman, but she owns her own hair salon and she's barely making it. And I just feel that while I don't want to flaunt my privilege and entitlement, which I obviously have, I want to be respectful, but I also want to help as much as I can.
You've mentioned the term expat on a budget, which brings me to an interesting discussion. There's often debate about the difference between an expat and an immigrant. What do you think about it?
The reason that I chose expat on a budget is because it's a really good moniker. People understand that it means that you live abroad. I also have on TikTok abroad on a budget, which could have two meanings, right? Abroad or abroad. And I know TikTok really does not. People are much younger. Usually it's a younger generation, not all, but most. And they don't like the word expat. But expat originally, as far as I understand it, because I did do a bit of research, were people that were paid by their jobs, by their work employer to move abroad. And whether that employer is in the new country or in their country of origin, they are here on a work visa and basically working for a short amount of time. I have a friend, I just was talking with her a couple hours ago, and she lives in Germany. She's from the US, but she's been there. She's lived abroad most of her life. And she said that she sees an expat as someone who's temporary and not permanently living in that country. And so she said that while she has her permanent residence in Germany, she's not going to stay there forever. So she still considers herself an expat, whereas an immigrant is somebody that will probably stay there forever, and they have a family there, and they have their ties there, and that kind of thing.
What a great way to put it. I've got to ask you this. What's next for you? Will Portugal be your forever home, or do you still have that itch to explore somewhere new?
So I don't know what the future holds. I have plan A, B, C, D, E. I don't know. I really want to get a van and travel. I would like to have Portugal as my home base. That would be great. And then travel, because I have a dog. So it's easier to have, you know, transportation than to take her on public transportation. That was really bad. I tried that. It was really bad for me. But I don't know. I have a partner in Spain. And so I have definitely considered moving to Spain for other reasons as well. The weather here in Porto is brutal in the winter. It's too much. I can't handle it. This is my third winter here and I'm not happy in the winters. So maybe go to Spain for the winters, but I can't afford that if I'm paying rent here. So I don't know what the future holds. I really want to explore the Balkans. Maybe I'll fall in love with another place. I realized traveling through the US, I thought, well, if it doesn't work out in Portugal, where else besides California would I want to live? And the one thing I learned about myself is I can live pretty much anywhere. I feel that it's probably the same in Europe. I can probably live, as long as I can afford it, pretty much anywhere. I can find really great things. I'm an optimist. So I can find really great positives and pros about everywhere.
Well, when you do, be sure to stop by Bosnia. We'll make you a proper Bosnian coffee. It's a whole ritual, and I think you'd love it. Before we wrap up, could you tell me a little bit about where people can find you online and how you can help them with their own relocation journeys?
I am keeping everything free. on Substack. So my Substack articles are free. They will remain free. You don't have to, and maybe eventually if I become super popular, which I don't see happening, but you never know, I would have the comments only people for paid subscribers. But right now, no, the comments are all open. I do answer every single comment. It takes me hours, but I do it. And I try to do it as, I try to give as much information as I possibly can. However, I am finding myself dialing that back a little bit because sometimes it's just overwhelming and I don't have time to do the research the questions that people are asking, but I do my best and I do respond to every single comment. And then I am posting every week. Some of them are super long because writing is my number one passion in life. I've been a writer my whole life and I've written and published 20. I've written 30 novels and published 20, but they're fiction. So now this is my way of giving back and getting that passion and creativity out there. So yeah, everything's free. My podcast is free. I'm a little bit behind, but I will try to catch up. And then I do have the class and obviously the coaching. It's affordable. It's cheap. And people can find me on expatonabudget.com. There's links to everything there.
Finally, what's next for Kimberly Ann?
Well, I was teaching 29 students English for 40 hours a week, and I just quit because I can't handle it. It's too much. So, and not making my rent. So my focus is continuing with the Substack. And then I haven't actually finished the class yet, but I'm working on finishing the class. So that's really up there. And then I got asked to write for International Living Magazine. So I'm going to be writing freelance writing for International Living. And that is something that I'm doing. So that's the end of this month. I have two pieces that are due. I have another idea, but I don't know if it'll pan out. So I don't want to talk about it yet.
That's okay, then. I'll let you go. How do you say? I don't know. Is obrigado thank you or goodbye?
Obrigado is thank you. Obrigado if you're male. Obrigada if you're female. And muito obrigada.
You've done it. You've jumped into the culture. You can tell me the difference between obrigado and... Yeah, I saw you. Oh. Hey, come on. You walk the talk.
That's easy. Thank you. But everybody should know that. And then goodbye, they say, it depends. Ciao. Or they say ate log it's ate logu, but they pronounce it ate log. Is common, but that's see you later. So there's a million. We don't say adios. So adios would be in Spanish adios, but in Portuguese it's pronounced adeus. And one of my teachers told me you just say that if you never want to see somebody again.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the podcast, where we hope you have discovered something new about Bosnia and Herzegovina.
If you've enjoyed the show, be sure to hit subscribe and share it with others who might enjoy a journey through the Balkans.
Want to help us keep the stories coming? You can support the podcast by visiting Buy Me a Coffee.
Your support helps us share even more about life, culture, and the hidden gems of this incredible region.
You will find the link in the show notes, along with extra content on our Substack, including behind-the-scenes insights and updates.
And of course, we'd love to hear from you. Send us your thoughts, questions, or ideas for future episodes.
Until next time, živjeli!